FAA was involved.
Oh, yeah. We were supposed to be here last year, but because of FAA, I shouldn't say delays, they're busy. And thanking us for the FAA makes us all safe. Yeah. But Al Kimball, who was my principal maintenance guy out of Orlando, watching what I do in Kissimmee, so I knew him, and he became the DAR, Designated Aviation Representative, to license the airplane. So he got busy and couldn't get there on time because he was busy with other things. And we finally got a license the day before Oshkosh 2018. We did not have time to do all the test flying, which all went very well, do the test flying, and Ray is busy flying F-16s and flying for Delta and flying other warbirds. And so there's problems, you know, time frame there. So we didn't make 2018. So we're 51 weeks late, or 51 weeks late for 2018.
Right. So on that day, Ray, you get in the cockpit on last day of the year, and what happened?
Well, it was a very nice day to go down. And like Tom's saying, the airplane was ready. There was so much that went into it. And every time we went down to prepare for the flights, it was a little bit of a sideshow. So we had so many people. Obviously, it's a huge worldwide interest when this airplane was going to fly. I know a lot of pressure on for people to get it flying. So on that day when we came down, we knew we had an airplane ready to go. You know, we wanted the people to be there to see it fly, but so everything had to be right. So really, we just went down with the intent to get some more taxi time on the airplane. But if all the stars aligned, which it did, I knew once I pushed the power up on that, you know, once I set the power, I knew I was going to go fly on that day. And so, and it did just beautifully, and obviously very short flight. So we did the first official flight actually in January, but it was nice to get some air under it, and it was a huge momentum to take us into the first official flight. Which we invited everybody down to come see. So even though, you know, I think amongst our camp, we knew the airplane was probably going to get some air under it that day. It worked out real well.
What is that like for you when you, as a test pilot, the first time, the first flight thing? What is that like for an aviator to get on an airplane and really not know for sure that it's going to fly?
Well, a lot of airplanes that I've test flown are airplanes that other people have flown. So it's hard to speak to an airplane like this to where there's just not a lot of data. And I say not a lot of data. Obviously, it was an approved flying airplane. There's a flight manual. You really have all the information right there in front of you, which is great. But Anderson was wonderful. We talked to the people with the Commemorative Air Force that actually had one. So the last flying F-82 was flew in the early 80s, and that airplane is the one that's sitting in the Dayton Museum right now, never to fly again, unfortunately. So there were a few people. One guy's name, Ronnie Gardner, he actually flew. He's a guy that actually flew that airplane back in the 80s, and so I was able to get some information before I got into it. But to answer your question, this one is so unique. Whenever you get into the airplane, it really – you know, certainly a great background airplane, the T-6, the P-51, a lot of the other warbirds kind of prepares you. But when you strap on two airplanes, it is a different experience.
So explain that. You said it's unique. In what way?
Well, obviously everyone looks at it and says, man, you know, that I think it's the number one question. Like, what cockpit do you choose to fly from? You know, well, you actually solo the airplane from the left cockpit. And like with the FAA, you were talking about it. Even from the FAA standpoint, since there's no one qualified, there's no instructors qualified, there's really nobody. They have to kind of scratch their head and go to the deepest end of the regulations to find a one-of-a-kind airplane. So whenever they blessed me to go fly the airplane, since it is a new rebuild, you have to go straight into the flight testing program, which is the phase one testing. However, usually you would have somebody come test fly your airplane that's already qualified in it. So you have no one qualified. You have to do the phase one testing. And those rules are pretty specific. You can't train. In fact, the running joke was even at the end of our test phase, which, like Tom said, went incredibly well. In fact, the FAA was going to work to actually lower the number of hours we needed because the flight testing went so well. We actually went to the end of the test phase anyway. It just worked out in the hours. But at the end of that phase, I was still not a P-82 pilot. You know, I'm still playing one on television, right? Because from a regulation standpoint, now I have to go out and train myself in the airplane, single-seat airplane, and then have somebody else come in and evaluate me fly it to prove that I can actually fly it. So it is quite a process. But, you know, again, as we, you know, when you ask about the flight characteristics and the testing, it is unbelievably unique just from a standpoint of taxiing. And I would say that is the biggest challenge when you taxi. And, of course, you see how wide the gear is. I don't even know how wide the gear is. You probably know how wide it is, Tom, but it's wide. So when you're taxiing down your normal size taxiway, if you decide to taxi in the middle and you're sitting in the left fuselage, that will put that wheel off in the dirt. So it's something you kind of make the center line a brick wall, and you just have to taxi on the little skinny taxiway on the left to keep this airplane just on the taxiway. So that's very unique.
With your incredible amount of experience flying so many different kinds of airplanes, do you get nervous? I mean, were you, quote, what we think of as nervous?
It may be ignorance. I don't know. I probably should have been nervous, but not really. You know, I know the level of detail and the amount of checks and rechecks and everything that Tom and his team does. You know, it's kind of like a NASCAR pit stop. You know, I land with the airplane to have the smallest little issues, and these guys are on it. And they're not just on it, but they're on it after a 14-hour, 15-hour day, you know. So the thing that you guys don't see is down in Douglas, Georgia, when there's no people that, you know, after we got done with the day and I'm going home because I'm tired and I didn't do anything other than go fly around in an airplane for an hour and a half. But these guys started in the morning, they start in the evening. So that really makes it I think that makes the confidence a lot better. And when you look at the flight characteristics with this airplane compared to the P-51, some of the other airplanes, it's quite docile, actually. It's very surprising on some of the things it does really well.
How similar is the cockpit and how it's all set up compared to a Mustang?
I'd say pretty similar. I mean, most people can see it. I'm glad they put the two airplanes together because I knew nothing about an XP-82 when I went down to fly it. So, you know, the first thing you do when you walk up to it is you see how much bigger it is. I mean, the thing is a monster. So I'm used to just jumping up at the wheel and jumping up on the wing. So this thing you pull up with your ladder to climb up on it first off. But it's just in the cockpit, feels very Mustang. There's a few differences, but you kind of, once you get in the air, you kind of pretend that other airplane's not attached to you, and it kind of looks and feels like a Mustang. In fact, if you take the pictures, you know, when I'm flying around with my iPhone taking pictures, if you don't take a picture over to the right, you'd never know you're in a P-82. It just looks like a short wing Mustang.
So did you have your iPhone out taking pictures that first flight?
Of course. No, I was quite focused on just not making the news in a bad way for that. But again, it flies very well, and the flight characteristics will surprise you on some of the stuff that we could talk about on how it flies.
So when you release the brakes, power brakes, what happened?
It goes straight as an arrow. So, you know, in the P-51, everybody talks about the P-factor and the torque and how you have to be gentle with the throttle. And that is a true statement. You got a 11-foot prop swing in there. So a lot of characteristics working against you to let you wreck it on a takeoff or landing. This is much like a jet. You know, both propellers are counter-rotating. So, you know, I look down with – how much time I have in a Mustang, you know, and you have your rudder trim set for right rudder trim, 6 degrees right rudder trim. Well, you look down at this one, it's zero. So I have to resist the urge to put in rudder trim. It is zero. Everything's zeroed out. So it's much like a jet. You push the power up, it goes straight as an arrow. You know, it's a little different managing the engines and managing two Merlins, but again, it's like a dart. It goes very straight. And
so what happened? You rolled down the runway, and what happened?
Well, I rolled down the runway on that. Like I said, at that point, you know, where I had picked a go, no-go. So all of our high-speed taxis are relatively short time. So, you know, I knew if I put air under the airplane, I was going to fly it around the airport. So that was really not a contingent for putting it back on the ground to stop. Literally, it just accelerated. You know, I looked down, and I'm at flying speed, and I still, you know, I'm like, man, and it's a beautiful day. Let's go fly.
Two things I forgot to mention. The left-hand turning engine, which is, you know, right there, that's a left-hand turner. They're counter-rotating propellers. That was found brand new in a box, brand new, in a garage in New Mexico City. How did it get there? We have no idea. There were only 40 of those engines ever built. 22 of them went on the XP and the B models, the 22 Merlin-powered ones. Of course, the rest of them were Allison-powered. So there was 18 remaining, and one of them ended up in Mexico City.
What did? How in heaven's name did you find it?
Well, Vintage V12s found it. Vintage V12s built both these engines, and MT Propellers did a wonderful job on the propellers. And I was buying another left-hand turning core and sending it to somebody for overhaul, and I get this phone call from Mike Nixon, all out of breath. He says, I found a brand new engine. Where? In a garage in Mexico City. Huh? I said, did you buy it? He said, yeah, of course I bought it. I said, okay, it's mine. Now, he even though it was brand new, it still had to be overhauled.